Hey, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report on this Friday, just 7 days before the inauguration of President-elect Trump. We are seeing this interesting transition of power, some last-minute legislative changes by Obama and policy changes and new rules. We talked about the NSA now sharing surveillance information with 16 different government agencies before privacy protections kick in, which is a big concern to many. And we're talking with James Perloff. His website's jamesperloff.com. And we're talking about geopolitics and the state of the world, where we've been, where we are, and where we're going. Before the break, we were talking about the cashless society, aspirations of the globalist, and the beta testing this in different portions of Europe and in the East and India. And I guess my question to you is, you were starting to talk about, beta, how they're testing and experimenting with this idea, and how they're doing this in other countries. We see, you mentioned the 98% decline in the dollar value since the implementation of the Federal Reserve, leaving only, 2 to 1.5% left of the dollar to be evaporated before our currency is basically worthless. Where do you see this going with, the continuing increase in income inequality, the rising of cost of the middle class is being wiped out systematically, it seems, by economic policies and the decline in the value of the dollar. Do you see a point in the near future where we could be looking at a cashless society situation here in the U.S.?
I think that's definitely their goal. Everything points to that. The pressure that banks put on their customers to go digital with their transactions and penalize them if they still take paper statements is an example of that. There has been this trend in money to make it less and less hard. I mean, at one time, of course, people used gold and silver coins in this country, and then when President Roosevelt came to power in 1933, they forced everyone to turn in their gold coins in exchange for paper. And what they were doing was they were transitioning from hard money to soft money in the form of paper, which of course can be printed limitlessly. And then they've taken that to the next stage. Now they don't even want the paper money anymore. Now they want to make it digital. And it's kind of scary to think that your wealth, which at one time you could, maybe people used to hoard their wealth. Back during the bank collapses of the 30s, people did that quite a bit. When the Bolsheviks took over in Russia, they had to go from house to house to confiscate the gold. But when money just exists in a digital form, it's pretty frightening to think that a government bureaucrat could wipe out savings that you spend a lifetime accumulating with a few keystrokes, because it only exists as digits in a digital bank account. But that's the way they're moving, and of course they do want to get rid of the cash. They do want us to be chipped. I don't know if you've seen the late Aaron Russo's interview where he talked about his meetings with one of the Rockefellers, and he was told that they were going to chip everyone, that was the long-term plan. And we see it with this Vera chip, the right-sized chip that you can have implanted. And of course, they say, isn't it wonderful, if your father has Alzheimer's and he wanders away, you can find him now. But it's so destructive, the thought that not only could they monitor your whereabouts through these chips, they could transmit signals to you in a destructive fashion. And again, if you're using this chip to buy and sell, and there are places, I understand, in England where they wave their hand and they can buy or sell because they got one of these chips implanted, they could just take that away. We've all known that feeling of swiping a credit card that doesn't work. Imagine when they turn off your chip and you can't buy or sell. And that brings in the Bible, of course, because the Bible tells us that no one will be able to buy or sell without the mark of the beast. And it's hard for me to imagine there isn't a strong connection there between the two.
No, you're absolutely right. And Aaron Russo is a Hollywood director of Trading Places. Mm-hmm. And then the documentary film you're talking about is Freedom to Fascism, I believe. And then there was an interview he did with Alex Jones that he talked about his Rockefeller friend. And he admitted that, this guy was telling him where the future was going and mm-hmm. the control that they wanted to wield over humanity. And every time I think of cashless society, that's exactly where I go, is right to, the beast, mark of the beast system, because from taking away the person's ability to hold their wealth, making them become part of a system, an electronic system. And as you talked about earlier, you know, the banks pushing to move everything digital. That all is so, it coincides with exactly with what the Bible says. And now that they're, the chip is not only a monetary instrument, but is also being looked at in the healthcare industry. And, you know, they actually have it in the law through the Federal Register that a Class 2 device or a radio frequency identification chip is a Class 2 device, and that's going to be implemented 2017-2018. Last time I saw, the Federal Register from September 24th, 2013, if I remember correctly. And that looks exactly where this is going, and that is very troublesome. And I believe they only need, you know, one or two events, a big economic collapse that is global, or some kind of, you know, even a EMP or taking everything offline and bringing it back. That's all they need is one situation, one or two situations like that to happen where they will be able to implement this. And they'll say, if you don't take this chip, you have something to hide. You're, you know, you're a terrorist or whatever. They're going to roll that out. But it's more of a reality today than it ever was in the past. And it's just a, you know, it's going back to, the Bible says there's nothing new under the sun. And we see, you know, this movement exactly where the Bible says we were going to go. And it seems every day we're getting closer. Very concerning.
Absolutely. Of course, the Bible also says that the Antichrist or the beast will rule over the whole world. And, of course, to govern the world, you need a world government. And that's another thing that ties together this whole New World Order, as we see the League of Nations being proposed, and then the same people bringing us the UN. And then when they couldn't make the UN work, they tried to use the Korean War to get the UN implemented as international peacekeeper. Didn't work. Then they tried the regional approach, you know, the European Union, and which came out of the common market. And they, of course, they developed NAFTA as a stepping stone towards a North American Union. They wanted the regional bodies to gradually bring about this world government step by step, boil the frog. But it may be that there's been enough resistance to the world government that they may feel that they need to take the drastic measure of a war, and as you said, some kind of crisis. You know, we were talking about Franklin D. Roosevelt confiscating everyone's gold in exchange for paper. You know, that was 1933. It was right after the crash in the Great Depression. So that was a crisis. It turned our money from hard to paper, and maybe what they feel they need is another world war to turn our money from paper to all digital and chips.
Yeah, and what's interesting is, you know, gold and silver has been a currency in the world throughout history, and just like with the snap of a finger, they changed it. And when after the gold was confiscated, I believe it was the next day, it doubled in value, if I my memory is correct.
That certainly pleased whoever FDR gave it to.
Yeah, and we know from the lessons in history from the, we talked about this a little bit last night, the Weimar Republic, how when their paper currency collapsed and gold and silver were people who had it, the purchasing power that they had was astronomical, where people were wheelbarrowing in paper currencies
by the
wheelbarrow. They couldn't even, you know, get groceries for their family, but, you know, 20-30 pieces of silver, they said, would buy you half or a whole city block in some cases. And to think about that and where we are today, it seems that we're not learning the lessons of from history, but at the same time, that's all by design, in my opinion, from these shadow governments and the way that they're pushing us. The inauguration, if we can talk about the transition of power for a moment, we've seen a number of now we're seeing that there's no threats, there's no terrorist issues, but throughout the last few weeks, they said, yes, there are. We're looking for lone wolf attacks. There's other people talking about protesting and disrupting the inauguration. Do you see a smooth transition of power here, or do you see some backlash from protesters, or do you see a more organized effort?
And if I can just interject something, kind of a compound question, because you've really done some great work on false flag events. Are we ripe for a false flag event here? So kind of a compound question with that.
I hope that it is a smooth transition, and they certainly have the police power to make the inauguration day relatively peaceful. Again, you as you said, the commander was under Obama's authority, and perhaps with the assistance of the news agencies, they may try to make it more violent or look more violent, because they certainly seem to be continuing to attack Trump relentlessly, and having a bad inauguration day would only help to continue to spoil his image as he proceeds into the presidency. Regarding a false flag, I am concerned about that. And two things. Well, one thing I think we can definitely count on is continuation of the kind of strife that we've been seeing in the streets. You know, at one time they wanted to, you know, Joe and I were talking about the European Union and the NAFTA and how they wanted to kind of regionally kind of peacefully transfer into world government. It seems right now, if you look at Europe, they're using this Merkel-induced immigration chaos to really destroy Europe and to create the kind of chaos that they need, perhaps, to generate this new world order. And with Trump standing in the way of further immigration in America, I believe that we can probably count on George Soros continuing to fund riots like the ones we saw in Ferguson and Baltimore, especially with him as president, with the media just continuing to play up any kind of police brutality in order to create a race war in America. I think they'd love to see a race war is divisive, and they'd love to see that amongst all the races if they could to help bring this country down and induce the police state. But I'll tell you one thing that I'm especially concerned about is this cover of The Economist, the magazine, which is half owned by the Rothschilds.
Boy, I'm glad you brought that up. Yes.
The world of I just had a black and white printed next to me. It's not in color, but maybe you can see it. It's got 8 tarot cards in it, and it's got a death card, and on the death card they have a nuclear bomb exploding, and that's their world in 2017. And of course that magazine has been known to tip people off. They did have a predictive cover about the Paris attacks last year. And 2017 is a year that I think the Rothschilds have a lot to celebrate as Zionist and New World Order people. Because if you look at it, 2017 is going to be a couple of minor 50th anniversaries. It's the 50th anniversary of the taking of Jerusalem, which is, you know, they're big on building this temple that the Antichrist or Man of Lawlessness will rule from, as predicted in 2 Thessalonians, and it's also the 50th anniversary of the bombing of the USS Liberty. But there's some 100th anniversaries that are particularly troubling. It's the 100th anniversary this year, 2017, of our entering World War I. We declared war in 1917. It's the 100th anniversary of the Bolshevik Revolution, which the Rothschilds certainly funded, and Lenin and Trotsky, and that was the first communist state. It's the 100th anniversary of the Balfour Declaration, which was issued to Lord Walter Rothschild and set up Israel. And it's also, coincidentally, the 100th anniversary of the main publication of the Scofield Reference Bible, which birthed Christian Zionism, which supported that state of Israel. So that's 400 anniversaries. It's also the 300th anniversary of the founding of the first Freemasonic Grand Lodge in London in 1717. And it's the 500th anniversary of the Catholic-Protestant split. Now, I know that some Protestants would look at that very favorably, that we got under the thumb of the Catholic Church, but I think from the Luciferian viewpoint, from the long view, they split the church, and that's what they wanted to do. So I look on 2017, I look at that cover, and I look at the anniversaries they've got to celebrate, and I think this is a dangerous one, and I think that we might be looking at perhaps another Israeli-induced false flag, especially if they think they've got an Israeli-supportive U.S. government behind them. So maybe something blamed on Iran. My next-to-last article was on 9/11, which I'm still learning about as being a nuclear event.
You know, yeah, and Joe, I just was looking at some emails we're getting, and we probably have a dozen emails wanting you to expand, if you don't mind, on the you had mentioned about Israel 9/11 connection, or Zionism and 9/11 connection. If you can expand on that a little bit, and then that could kind of take into your cover as well, that nuclear aspect that you're referencing.
Yeah. Well, first of all, we've got the dancing Israelis. These were five men who were caught by neighbors celebrating as the Twin Towers were burning and collapsing. They were photographing it. They were high-fiving each other. You know, when you high-five somebody, that's celebration. I mean, that's, you've accomplished something. And, of course, they were turned loose after 2 months by Michael Chertoff, who was put in charge of the 9/11 investigation by the Justice Department. He was a dual Israeli citizen. And what is an Israeli citizen doing investigating 9/11 and turning these Israeli perpetrators or celebrators at least free? You've got Boston's Logan Airport, where Flights 11 and 175 took off, being in, owned by an Israeli firm, an Israeli-owned firm.
Right.
You've got Larry Silverstein being such good friends with Benjamin Netanyahu that Netanyahu would call him every week on Sunday, and that's according to the Israeli newspaper Haaretz. That's how close those two were. And he just, of course, became the new owner of the World Trade Center less than 2 months before the event. He invested $124 million, he and his partners, and they got a $5 billion payout. And, of course, you've got the Odigo instant messaging, Israeli instant messaging system warning Israelis not to be in the World Trade Center on that day. You've got Zim Navigational, the ninth largest shipping firm in the world, an Israeli firm, moving out of the World Trade Center, breaking a lease, which they'd been in there for decades, just shortly before the event, saying that rent was cheaper someplace else. And, you know, on Flight 11, for example, you've got right behind a Mohammed Atta, if he was on that flight. But on the flight plan, you'll see there was an Israeli commando, ex-Israeli commando, Danny Lewin. And if you go to my article on Flight 11 on my website,
yep.
I'm not the one who originated this, but there's a picture of Danny Lewin. He had himself photographed in before 9/11 in front of two panels that look like the Twin Towers, and he's wearing a watch, and it's a Swatch watch, hijacker model, and the hour hand, the minute hand, the second hand, and the date are all set on the 11, and he was on Flight 11 on 9/11, and he's got a big smile on his face. And, you know, the Israeli connections, they run very, very deep. And, of course, who is the beneficiary? You know, when you're a detective, when you're solving a crime, you say, who benefited? Who had the insurance on this person who died, right? America didn't benefit from 9/11. We've got the police state and all these expensive wars. The Muslims didn't benefit. They've been turned into chaos in the Middle East. The only beneficiary was Israel. Through the assistance of some people who contacted me, my website, next to last article is about 9/11 as a nuclear event, but I want to pause here because you guys may have some feedback from your emailers or yourselves regarding this.
Well, you know, go ahead, Joe. No, the feedback was, it was just a lot of people don't understand. A lot of people are
the Israeli 9/11 thing has caught some people off guard. But if anybody's done their research on 9/11, they would know that there were, the Israelis dancing on the roof that went back to Israel and went on the TV and talked about having to go to New York to document the event. But there is, when we talk about Israel, like you said earlier, there's a lot of
It seems like everyone gets, oh my goodness, yeah. you can't talk about that.
And this is from not making the distinction between the shadow government groups that are swaying, and like the Rothschilds who are trying to push agendas and policies in Israel versus the people versus the biblical and historical aspects of it, and that needs to be separated, because just like America, we have people who are good in the government, then you have these shadow government organizations that are doing evil things behind the scenes in the name of America, and then you have the people of America, and that falls into a number of different categories, and it's very convoluted. And you talked about the nuclear aspect of 9/11.
Yeah, I'm curious about that because that's a subject.
Yeah, we've had Judy Wood on, and she talks about the was a particle nuclear weapon,
directed energy beam.
Yeah, and that's something I didn't give much consideration in the past, and I still kind of don't, except for some of the what we've seen down there on Ground Zero, from the different streets full of cars that were disintegrated to the collapsing and dustifying of the buildings. It's kind of hard to explain without looking at it in that perspective at the same time. But then you get into
strange.
But there's things that come along with that, like the direct particle beam that people start talking about there was no planes on 9/11, and it gets very convoluted, but we have to be able to separate the factual and potential factual information from a lot of the speculation that we see in the different parts of the internet and messaging boards and whatnot.
Well, I just want to first of all say that there are very intelligent people on you know, all sides of this analysis of 9/11. But I just wanted to bring it a step further, and this is really with some help from people who were writing to me. The way I started off, well, I really started about Israel's long obsession with nuclear weapons, and you know, they started their nuclear weapons program in 1949, the year, which is pretty early. I mean, you just created a new state and you already want nuclear weapons. And even Wikipedia says that David Ben-Gurion was obsessed with nuclear weapons. And I cite, you know, I was a big fan of Hilaire Duberrier before the internet. He wrote a newsletter, intelligence newsletter, from 1958 to 2001. I met him when he was in his 90s. He was an old OSS man. He had many intelligence contacts. But in his September 1963 newsletter, he talked about Ben-Gurion's fury with John F. Kennedy because Kennedy had sent American planes over their Dimona reactor plant. He had just signed a nuclear test ban treaty, and part of the deal was that Israel would stop creating nukes. And Ben-Gurion resigned over that. Hmm. And when Michael Collins Piper wrote his book on Israel being the ones behind the Kennedy assassination, I didn't pay that much attention because I'd seen so many theories and red herrings about Kennedy. But I started to pay attention when Mordecai Vanunu, who was the Israeli nuclear whistleblower who exposed their program, when he was finally released from prison, he said, wait till you find out that Israel was behind Kennedy's assassination over Israel's nukes. I started to pay attention. In any event, that's just the lead up. Let's talk a little about 9/11 as a nuclear event. There's more to it. There's say Luciferian aspects. You know, when you talk about some of this spirit cooking and some of these Luciferian revelations that made about the upper elite, you know that Satan's behind this whole thing. You know, they used to sacrifice babies to Moloch, mm-hmm. and the Satanists think they draw power from the death. Well, you know, things like Nagasaki and Dresden are actually almost like massive burnt offerings. And it was an author named David J. Dionisi who tuned me into this. He wrote a great book on Nagasaki, which I reviewed on my website. And he said, Jim, you know, 9/11 was that kind of offering too. But, let's talk about 9/11 as a nuclear event and a continuity of that Israeli nuclear program. Benjamin Netanyahu, 2 days after 9/11, was interviewed by Tom Brokaw, and he made a remark that really went past everyone. But I have the clip there, and you can watch it on YouTube. But here's what he said, quote, in 1995, I wrote a book called Fighting Terrorism, and I said, if we don't arrest the tide of militant Islamic terrorism, then the next thing will be is not a car bomb in the World Trade Center, but a nuclear bomb. And unquote. And then at that point, he kind of hedges. He realized he said a little too much. He says, now, it wasn't a nuclear bomb. It was a 350-ton conventional bomb, unquote. So which makes him wonder how Netanyahu, close friend of Larry Silverstein, wondered what the precise yield of the bomb was. But as I looked at it, and again, you know, I've had some help on this, there are a lot of indications that we're dealing with a couple of suitcase nukes on 9/11. And I just want to give some of the evidence for that. For one thing, the U.S. Geological Survey examined dust samples from the World Trade Center, and they found that there were inexplicably high amounts of components of nuclear fission, uranium, thorium, barium, strontium, beryllium, no way to really explain it other than a nuclear explosion. Also, all that melting, you know, those melted steel
for
and
weeks.
The fires burning for actually, I think it was over 3 months. And, of course, a nuclear explosion is extremely hot. It's millions of degrees at its center, and then it becomes hundreds of thousands of degrees and tens of thousands of degrees as you go away from the center of the explosion. But that was another thing. Another was the seismic booms at Palisade, New York, that were recorded to indicate two gigantic explosions that couldn't be explained by just falling debris. But here's some smoking guns. One is that the type of cancer that first responders get more than any other type of cancer in comparison to its expected rate is thyroid cancer. Now, why is that significant? It's significant because it's a signature of an atomic bomb. Atomic bombs give off iodine-131, which is why some people keep potassium iodide tablets on hand to protect their thyroid in case of a nuclear bomb going off. So why is the first responders getting thyroid cancer? It's a smoking gun of a nuclear bomb. Then you've got that vaporization you guys were touching on. Inside the World Trade Center buildings, everything was vaporized. There were 10,000 filing cabinets. Only one survived from one of the basements. All the furniture, computers were vaporized. The people inside were vaporized. The only bodies were the ones who jumped before those explosions. That was no collapse. You can't account for the vaporization of the inner contents of a building by a collapse. Time is flying.
Yeah, it is. This is fascinating.
And you're right. There is a lot of anomalies about 9/11 that don't make sense when looking at it just from a building collapse. I mean, just the buildings themselves. And you remember when the buildings collapsed and the antennas on top of the buildings just dust, they became dust as they fell. Definitely not normal in the structural engineering world. And that's why you had the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth Form, because it was inconsistent with anything they've seen in the past. Folks, we're talking with James Perloff. We'll be back in our final segment with James right after this. Stay with us.
Greenovative. Go to HagmanReport.com. Click on the link to Greenovative. But what Greenovative is, it's a small company in Florida. They created something called the G-Mag Power Cell. It produces electricity by adding salt water to this unit that recharges rechargeable batteries. It's the coolest thing you'll ever see in your life. It's really neat. Really a super device. All right, you need just 2 teaspoons of ordinary table salt, a little water, but a bing, you're charging your rechargeable batteries. Super G-Mag Chargeable is affordable, it's lightweight, weighs about 8 ounces, it's durable, it's EMP proof, and it's environmentally friendly, that it is. It'll provide safe and convenient power for recharging 6 AA batteries off the grid when other power sources aren't available, anywhere, anytime, in any weather, day or night. Go to greeninnovative.com. That's greeninnovative.com. Perhaps you're a business out there, a small business. Would you like to extend the reach of your business? I bet you would. Would you like to have the same opportunities as companies such as Omaha Steaks, Pro Flowers, and Casper Mattress, and some of the bigger companies out there? Would you like to have that same power? Advertise on our program. Go to HagmanandHagman.com or send an email to opportunities@HagmanandHagman.com. If you go to HagmanReport.com and HagmanandHagman.com, there's a link where you can. It's a big red box. You'll see it. Click on that link and go ahead and read the benefits what we have created for you. I think it's a fabulous opportunity.
For investors, timberland has become the symbol of safety. Global tropical timber demand continues to surge as the world's population increases. The need for managed, sustainable timber production forests has never been greater. When stock markets crash, trees keep growing. Direct ownership of fully managed tropical timberland acreage is now available to accredited investors. Prime, valuable hardwood groves close to the beautiful Costa Rican border generate and maintain superior long-term wealth. Consider visiting our forest plantations. Qualified accredited investors should go to PreciousTimberProfits.com or dial 855-888-6288 for more information. Call 855-888-6288 or visit PreciousTimberProfits.com. This announcement does not constitute either an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offering made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288, PreciousTimberProfits.com. PreciousTimberProfits.com.
We'll be right back.
Hey, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Reporter. Our guest is Mr. James Perloff. What an interesting man. His books, fantastic books. Truth is a Lonely Warrior. Go to jamesperloff.com. That's P-E-R-L-O-F-F.com for information. Great articles, too. He's a prolific writer, great author. And it's interesting because we're touching on subjects that, you know, oh, my goodness, sacred cows for many people, right? But nonetheless, we're all adults in the room. We need to really understand what's taking place, what's going on. And we know that 9/11, right before the break, we were talking about 9/11. We know that 9/11 didn't happen the way that they said it happened, regardless of how you think it happened. It didn't happen the way they said it happened. So how did it happen, and why aren't we being told the truth? And it's interesting because Mr. Perloff has done the research, and we're getting into that. Before we get back to Mr. Perloff, I want to mention healthmasters.com. Healthmasters.com, folks, if you're not buying your vitamins, your nutritional supplements from healthmasters.com, you're missing out. Healthmasters.com. Actually, if you go to healthmasters.com and enter the promo code DougBooks, you'll get a fantastic, with your order, you'll get a fantastic series of books. That's DougBooks as the promo code. But healthmasters.com is the place to go, healthmasters.com. Joe, I'll kick it back to you, and we'll bring Mr. Perloff back on here and
Before the break, we were talking about 9/11 and the different smoking gun pieces of evidence that point to a nuclear type of detonation, and you talked about the noise, the booms over the Palisades, and then the thyroid cancer, the type of cancer that the first responders were getting, and the pulverization of the not only the buildings but the equipment and things inside the buildings, and especially even the bodies, like you mentioned. They found DNA. It got down to, you know, on rooftops, they were finding just, you know, maybe tiny body parts or pieces of blood, and they were identifying bodies just through, analyzing what DNA they could. But there's still lots of people who have been missing and have never been found.
Mm-hmm. And right. Look, my question as well would be, not a traditional nuclear bomb necessarily, like you think of Nagasaki and Hiroshima. Mm-hmm. You have two separate bombs, types of bombs, but perhaps something more advanced that we have not seen before, or what?
Something fairly conventional that we have seen before. But just to complete that evidence, we mentioned the nuclear fission elements in the samples. The seismology spikes, the residual fires, the thyroid cancer, and the vaporization of the contents. Another is the force that blew parts of the World Trade Center across the street. I mean, you had a huge piece weighing multiple tons that impaled itself in the American Express building. Other pieces flew 600 feet and knocked over the Winter Garden atrium, and a nuclear bomb would have that kind of force. Another one is that big dust cloud. Remember that big dust cloud everyone was fleeing from? You look at a video of nuclear explosions, they create that kind of ground-level dust cloud. And to address your question about what type of bomb, people will, the foremost objection to this is that, well, where's all the Geiger counter readings with the high radiation? Well, you also have low radiation nuclear weapons, and during the Cold War, we tried to develop a clean nuke. We developed what we call battlefield nukes, and we even had something called the Davy Crockett recoilless gun, which would fire a mini nuke. A battlefield nuke is not going to have a lot of radiation, because if it does have a lot of radiation, it'll affect your own troops. And so with Israel, what kind of nukes do you think they specialize in? Now, they keep their nuclear program an ironclad secret. They won't say how many they've got or what type they've got, even though we demand complete transparency about weapons from every other Middle East country. It's okay if Israel can keep its program a secret. But obviously, they're going to emphasize low radiation nukes. Why? Because if Israel gets into a war with its neighbors, it doesn't want radiation blowback coming to Tel Aviv. So they're going to have strategic nukes, suitcase nukes, battlefield nukes. These are suitcase nukes can be carried in a backpack. So you could have Larry Silverstein is the brand new owner. He's so close to Netanyahu that they call each other every week. He's a brand new owner. Easily could have given a couple of agents carrying each a nuke down into the basement, just where Netanyahu predicted it would be put, into the shaft of elevator 50, the lowest point in the building. It's the only elevator that ran the entire length of each building in the middle, and was its surface pits were embedded in the bedrock. So that bedrock would create a perfect launching pad for a nuke. The surrounding bedrock will contain most of the blast, which will follow the path of least resistance going up to the top. And what's interesting about this is it explains the damage to the other buildings, because as you, I'm sure you know, building 7 caught fire, building 5 caught fire, building 6 caught fire, building 6 had this crater down to the basement. And why did all these other buildings caught fire? And when did they catch fire? They couldn't have caught fire before the buildings collapsed, the towers collapsed, because if they did, you would see smoke plumes coming from the smaller buildings in the footage. And newscaster would say, we seem to have another building on fire. Now, some people say it was separate bombs, but why would separate bombs not bring these smaller buildings down, except for Building 7 at 5:20 p.m. in an obvious controlled demolition? What happened, what some of us who looked at it believe happened was, when those bombs went off in the service pits of Elevator 50, in the deepest, we're talking about 6 levels down, at 6 basement levels of the Twin Towers, they also had sump pits down there. And the entire Trade Center was connected by underground pipes 3 feet wide for stormwater drainage. Now, when that blast followed the path of least resistance up through Elevator 50 shaft and hit the top, until it hit the place where the air, you know, the so-called airplane holes were, where the initial explosions had taken place, the secondary force of the blast followed path of least resistance through the pipes that were designed to take drain water, flood water out from the lowest points of the Trade Centers. It was all interconnected and into the other buildings. So that's why you have buildings 5, 6, and 7 catching fire. This is what, I'm not saying this dogmatically, I'm suggesting this as an alternative explanation of what happened. And so this is covered in my articles called 9/11 and Beyond, the Israeli Rothschild Obsession with Nuclear Weapons. It talks about how Victor Rothschild stole England's nuclear secrets during World War II and gave them to the Soviet Union, which was the first Rothschild proxy state. Of course, Victor Rothschild is the father of Jacob Rothschild, probably one of the two most powerful men in the world today. And his theft of those nuclear secrets is covered in the 1994 book, The Fifth Man, by Roland Perry. This is all documented. It just doesn't get the attention that the mainstream media doesn't want it to have.
Okay. Now, but here I'm. Now, let me ask the larger question. Mm-hmm. What's the end game? What's the benefit? Who benefits with respect to this particular, you know, putting the shoulder of the, or the blame on the shoulders of perhaps a non-nation state actor on behalf of Israel? How does Israel benefit from this?
Well, it generates the wars they need. If you go back to the Rothschild-funded Zionist Congresses of the late 1890s, they wanted, this has been a Rothschild obsession to create the State of Israel, the Zionist State of Israel. And I have a clip in this article, 9/11 and Beyond, from Ben-Gurion, the first Prime Minister of Israel, the guy who got furious with Kennedy over Kennedy's opposition to Israel's nukes. In that clip, you'll see Ben-Gurion, August the 8th, 1945, calling for a new world order. Those are his words, okay? New world order and Zionism go hand in hand. Every government has a capital. So where do you, you know, our capital's in Washington, D.C. Where do you think the capital of world government is going to be? It's going to be in Israel, in Jerusalem. Hibbert Prime Minister Ben-Gurion said in 1962, Look magazine, quote, in Jerusalem, the United Nations, a true United Nations, will build a shrine of the prophets to serve the federated union of all continents. This will be the seat of the Supreme Court of mankind. Or you go to the Jerusalem Report, October the 25th, 1999. You have Rabbi Menachem Froman saying that Israel will be, quote, the capital of the world. Isn't it only fitting that Jerusalem will be the seat of the United Nations, cultural bodies, human rights organizations? Isn't it only proper that Jerusalem be the place where members of all faiths convene to announce their freedom of prejudice, hostility, and war, unquote. So this has been a long part. Zionism is creating the capital of this world government. A lot of people understand world government, but they're sympathetic to Zionism because they think that the modern state of Israel is some sort of godly recreation of godly Israel. But take a look. Tel Aviv has been voted by gays as the most gay-friendly nation in the world. You know, God didn't even allow the Hebrews to enter the Promised Land with Moses due to their lack of faith. He made them wander in the wilderness for 40 years. He wouldn't let them in. You think that the modern atheistic political leaders in Israel today are more faithful? This isn't a move of God. This is a move of the Luciferian Rothschilds. And unfortunately, our churches, many of our evangelical churches, have been faked out by it. That's why I have a very extensive article on my website called The War on Christianity, Part 2, Christian Zionism. And it goes into the whole history of Cyrus Schofield, his con game, and how after the Pope refused to endorse Theodore Herzl's plan for Zionism in 1904, Schofield was immediately sent to England, where Oxford University agreed in advance to publish his new reference Bible, which became the birthing of Christian Zionism by reinterpreting Scripture to mean that God wanted the Jews, the modern Jews, to return and establish a political state there.
Interesting you know, take.
One of the things about Israel I go back and forth on is in the Bible it talks about, you know, the nation being born again in a day, the reestablishing of Israel and the returning of the monetary system and the one language. And then, you know, doing research and from the Holocaust, Israel obviously was born out of the UN and US resolutions. But then there's another side where I found a very interesting YouTube video that documented a number of different newspapers from the 1915 up until before the Holocaust, where it kept talking about 6 million Jewish people. And it was very obscure references and different papers from across the United States. And it was almost like it was priming the pump for that number of 6 million Jewish Holocaust victims. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
I have.
Can you make any sense of that?
Well, there seems to be some sort of obsession with it. And, you know, I just mentioned to you this clip I have embedded on, it's from YouTube, but it's embedded in the article 9/11 and beyond, where I said that David Ben-Gurion calls for a new world order. It's August the 8th, 1945. And in that same clip, he talks about the 6 million Jews who perished during the war. Now, how could he know that on August the 8th, 1945? The war has just ended. The population of Europe is scattered all over. There's no way they could have done a count or come up with a six. He already had that 6 million in his mouth. It had been sitting there for a long time. There, of course, have been many challenges to that. Nobody denies that the Holocaust took place, that there were these camps, but many do believe that the what took place in those camps has been altered and exaggerated for this express purpose of creating this Zionist state of Israel and through media control. You know, they say if you want to know who rules you, find out who you can't criticize. Now, 6 million people certainly did die in the Holodomor of the Ukraine under Bolshevik rule, under Stalin. Yet the New York Times denied that at the time that any starvation was taking place. It was a forced famine.
Yep.
But you can read all about the Holodomor now. I wrote an article on it for the New American in 2009. Walter Duranty of the New York Times won a Pulitzer Prize for writing articles that denied there was any starvation in Ukraine. Yet the British historian David Irving, who's the only historian who has been through every document in every German archive pertaining to World War II, he questioned the use of gas chambers in the Holocaust, and he was sent to prison for questioning that Holocaust. And so you have to ask, why is it that one Holocaust is considered above examination, yet any other Holocaust can even be denied and there's no consequences for it? So that takes us to another area. We're not going into Holocaust revisionism here, but you raise a great point that the 6 million figure had been settled on even before the war began.
Yeah, and when I saw the video, I that was a few months ago, and I haven't brought it up or looked into it anymore, but I was taken back by how many references the 6 million Jews that were in these papers and decades before the war started. It was just very strange, and thank you for clearing that up a little bit. We got about, 13 minutes left?
Yep.
Where do you want to go from here?
You guys were talking about fake news before. That's certainly been a subject. I consider you know, it's interesting how this term fake news suddenly appeared on the scene.
Yes.
And everybody had it on their – in fact, Hillary Clinton said we must stop this, quote, malicious epidemic of fake news. It was like the word got out. And, you know, when I look on this is it's backlash from mainstream. You know, I made a meme. Other people did it too, but it was, original, at least at the moment that I did it. I made a meme I found a picture of David and Goliath, and I labeled Goliath mainstream media, and David I labeled alternative media, because this was a victory. The defeat of Hillary Clinton was a victory for the alt media over the mainstream media. But the fake news label, and this there's this new thing, and the latest, I'm sure you've heard of it, in the latest defense authorization bill that calls for a global engagement center, which shall, quote, lead, synchronize, and coordinate efforts of the federal government to recognize, understand, expose, and counter foreign state and non-state propaganda and disinformation efforts aimed at undermining United States national security interests. Very, unquote, very broad language there. It seems that what we're looking at is backlash, because the establishment doesn't like the fact that we, the alt media, you guys, and the Corbett Report, and all these alt media people had the victory. You know, we beat them out. We had a populist victory. Brexit was another example of that, in my opinion. It was rebellion against the effort to consolidate Europe into this New World Order that, you know, the European Union had been designed to do. So I consider that, and you know, they're talking about fact-checking Facebook now, and all of a sudden, you know, you're not going to be, free speech is being, they want to gut free speech in the name of stamping out fake news. Although I think they're backpedaling in the last two or three days a little bit on this, because their own fake news keeps getting exposed, and I think they realize they're losing the battle. People are sick of the mainstream media. They've been bringing this fake news from the Spanish-American War, when they claimed the Spaniards were showing Cubans to sharks, from World War One, when they claimed the Germans were cutting the hands of Belgian children, and after the war, nobody found any witnesses to that. Or World War II, when Winston Churchill was making speeches, "We shall fight them on the beaches," and it turned out it was only a BBC actor named Norman Shelley. Or the incubator babies, or the Tonkin Gulf, or the non-existent weapons of mass destruction. Mainstream media has been bringing us false news for years, and the reason people turn to shows like yours is they realize that you guys aren't paid by the CIA. And you aren't paid millions of dollars to advance someone's political agenda by some deep state. You're here in defiance of that to bring people the truth. And that's why we're winning the war. And even this fake news scare-mongering doesn't seem like it's having much effect.
That's true. However, it's still there's still an element of this fake news. It seems like conspiracy theory no longer works, so we'll insert fake news.
Yeah, and we see the pushback. You know, one of the interesting things, this Trump report that came out, this false intelligence briefing, was one of the quicker turnarounds. I mean, I know the intelligence briefing's been there for a while, the false intelligence briefing. But, you know, as soon as it was launched, it was labeled for what it was, which was a fast turnaround from, you know, a news outlet running the story to it being called fake. But like you said, they've been doing this for decades and centuries. They've been using false intelligence to start wars, to launch attacks against our own nation, to, you know, from I mean, there's just so many examples of it, of attempts and of successful times where they've done this. Now they're, but what you said about the alternative media beating the mainstream media, they'll never admit to that. They're saying, you know, the Russian influence of the WikiLeaks and hacks, you know, it's Russia's fault for Hillary Clinton's own emails and her staff's own emails to be released. I mean, any country could have done that. Any government could have done it. It doesn't matter who did it. It matters what was in those emails. That was the problem. And then to see, you know, they're now blaming the National Enquirer and tabloid headlines for Hillary not winning the election. I mean, they're doing and blaming everybody except telling the truth about what actually happened. And that's a little concerning. And like you said, these globalists are willing to take, you know, 3, 4, 5 steps back in certain areas that they've been pushing on. And what they do is they're great at, you know, creating a distraction with one hand while, you know, they'll take another part of the agenda and move it forward where they're, you know, not getting exposure from. And I think that's what's happening right now.
Right. They are good at that. You know, you'll often find that critical events like the Orlando shooting, that took place right when they were passing the TPP, trying to pass the TPP in Congress. They do like to distract us. You know, we're talking about the Russian hacking, and, you know, if Putin was the big aggressor they said he is, he would have wanted Hillary to win the election. You know why? Because the military is not going to take orders from Hillary. So if he's planning aggression, he would have been backing Hillary anyway. But I found this kind of funny, you know, on Twitter, and Elizabeth Warren tweeted this in in October, she said, it's not rigged, Donald Trump. You're losing fair and square. Put on your big boy pants because this is what accountability looks like. And here's one from CNN. This is October before the election. CNN, no, the presidential election can't be hacked. Now that CNN is screaming it was hacked. And then Obama, this is a quote from Obama, and you can see him on YouTube saying this. He said, quote, there is no serious person out there who would suggest that you could even rig America's elections. There is no evidence that this has happened in the past or that there are instances that this could happen at this time. So I advise Mr. Trump to stop whining, unquote. Barack Obama, October of this year. And now he says it was hacked by Russia. And he said it couldn't be done.
Well, I believe him. Hey, that settles it. Russia hacked it. It's, you know, I have no questions. No questions. No further questions. Yeah, it's ridiculous, right?
Absolutely, it's ridiculous.
Man, sorry about that. It
shows a hypocritical nature and how these people will do and say anything just to come across as being right or even mm-hmm. just say anything to please their base, no matter if it's true or not.
Mr. Perloff, are you concerned about being censored at all? I mean, here we are in the alternative or the independent media. There's a war against the independent media. Are you concerned about being censored here in the, or the alternative media being censored in general?
Yes, I am. You know, I was quoting that Defense Authorization Act. Just to tie in history, 100 years ago, they passed something called the Espionage Act when World War I began. And they had provisions against free speech in it, which caused a lot of people to go to prison. And I'm actually going to quote the Espionage and Sedition Acts. And whoever in the United States is at war shall willfully utter, print, write, or publish any disloyal, profane, scurrilous, or abusive language about the form of government of the United States shall be punished by a fine of not more than $10,000 or imprisonment for not more than 20 years. That was written into the Act. And, you know, not one German spy was ever caught under the Espionage Act. There's only Americans who protested the war. And just to give you a couple examples, Robert Goldstein made a movie about the Revolutionary War in 1917 called The Spirit of the 76, but it portrayed Britain negatively, which was our ally at that time. He got a 10-year prison sentence. And Louis Nagler, who was Assistant Secretary of State for Wisconsin, he refused to contribute to the Red Cross, whose war council was headed by J.P. Morgan partner Henry Davison. He said, you know, he said, there's, quote, there's too much grafting these subscriptions. Not more than 10% goes to the soldiers, unquote. He got a 20-year prison sentence, and I was eventually commuted. But they used the excuse of war to say that people were disloyal and people were really going to jail just for speaking out. And so, yeah, you can see that with the fizzling of the fake news mantra that perhaps they will try to, if they did get into a war, they might get more serious about it and say, you know, you're working for other countries. You know, WAPO, the Washington Post, had this article, I'm sure you know, that said that there were all these Russian disinformation websites. And they named Paul Craig Roberts and James Corbett, and even Ron Paul, former candidate, was named. And you know, they presented no evidence whatsoever, which is by definition fake news, right? When you print a story and there's no evidence to back it up. So I'm concerned that if the their fake news approach doesn't work, that they might resort to actual legal measures to suppress free speech.
I did a video about that, the asymmetry of warfare, or of the censorship, that asymmetry of the warfare against free speech. And I mean, we're seeing it in lawfare, we're seeing it in, or right before you had come on, we spoke with Tara from Reality Calls show out of London in the UK, and she said, you know, you can't, there's things you can't say, you'll get arrested. So it's certainly progressing in that fashion. James Perloff is our guest, or has been our guest. His website, jamesperloff.com, and if you want a real treat, of course, The Shadows of Power on Amazon, or jamesperloff.com. Truth is a Lonely Warrior. That's a fantastic book. And, of course, all of his articles on jamesperloff.com, linked in hagmanreport.com. You gotta read these articles. I mean, these are very well-researched and extremely, well, widen your intellectual prowess there, because there's some good stuff. I mean, it's all good, mm-hmm. but a lot of stuff. Go ahead.
Yeah, you do it when you write and put together the stories. You do a great job of articulating all the different aspects of the story and covering a huge amount of ground when you do that, and that's very helpful. You don't just take a preconceived notion and drive that point home. You really do a good job of opening it up so people can make their own mind and continue to do research based off what you've written, and it's a big help.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, guys. It's a great pleasure to be part of the Truth Movement, and I think that the more guys like you and the rest of us who are committed to alternative media can need to get the word out, the more the bloggers is going to be, the more people waking up, and the harder it's going to be to enforce those kind of measures they want to enforce. So, you know, we have truth on our side. They only have money on their side, and truth has a great way of winning out. You're in a courtroom. You got a fair shake to present your side of the story. You're going to win over the liars, and so that's why alternative media is winning. We have truth on our side, and we know that Jesus Christ himself said, "I come to tell you the truth." We know that God's on our side. The enemy's got Lucifer. He ain't going to win.
Amen to that, and thank you so much for your gracious gift of time tonight. It was just a fascinating 2 hours with you, and it just went by so quickly. Yeah, covered a lot of ground indeed. We're going to be watching for, well, next Friday, the inauguration, the turnover, mm-hmm. see what happens after that, and immediately following that, we're going to see what's taking place. But again, Truth is a Lonely Warrior, great book, as well as The Shadows of Power. Mr. Perloff, Shadows of Power, is that still in print? Can we still get that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's been through many printings. It's sold too well to for the publisher. I'm not the publisher of that one. To give up. So yeah, it's you can get it on Amazon very easily.
Okay, all right. Because I was looking, I just for some reason I couldn't. It looked like it was there was limited copies available. So all right, very good. God bless you, my friend.
Yeah,
thanks
for coming on. We look forward to having you
guys.
Again.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. All right, folks, that'll do it for us this week. My goodness, what a tremendous week news wise, fake news wise. A lot of ground covered with Mr. Perloff. Great, gracious man, great guest. And, of course, Tara from Reality Calls earlier. Next week, we've got just a tremendous week for you planned as well.
Mm-hmm.
I want to thank JD, John Robertson, Eric the Tech, Jackie, Joe, Lady the Studio Dog, and each one of you. Thank you for your gift of time. Thank you for being part of our program. Thank you for caring enough to tune in. And thank you for being a part of the truth as it really is. Joe?
Till Monday. Have a great weekend. Stay safe and
settle for
we
battle.
We'll be here if anything.
If anything does break, you can tune right in and check HagmanReport.com. And don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel. And by the way, subscribe or follow James Perloff on social networking and go to JamesPerloff.com to bookmark his website. God bless. Yeah.